You are listening to the epic fantasy novel Lion's Last Kill, and this is Chapter 15. I want to thank you for listening, and if you're looking forward to the print version, it's going to be coming out on print, and it'll be available on Amazon.com pretty soon. If you like epic fantasy and you want to hear more, or if you want to start at Chapter 1 of this novel, you can check out one of my websites, www.stormthecastle.com, www.castlefiction.com, or www.epicfantasy.com. The epic fantasy has a dash in the middle, so that's epic-fantasy.com. And if you want up-to-date news and information in epic fantasy and fantasy books, movies, stuff like that, you can check out my blog that's linked to any one of those websites. Thanks again, and this is Chapter 15 of Lion's Last Kill. Oh, hey, and things are starting to get heated up, so this is going to be a fun chapter. Enjoy. Day 3. They woke early and had a light meal, then broke their camp by tearing down the tents and packing them up. The cold was now very bitter, and they got their bodies into fast motion to prevent that bitterness from sinking in. But they were balancing two different things. They could only move so fast before becoming fatigued. The thinned air was having its effect on them. By the end of this day, they would be moving along at a slow pace, because it would be all they would be capable of. Toward the top, they would be using breathstones, but even that would be of limited help. Their strongest assets now would be endurance and determination. And with that in mind, and the voice of the Oracle getting stronger in their heads, they made off on their climb. At the end of today, they would make their final camp. And from there, they would depart tomorrow morning for the summit. And after reaching it, and doing what they had to do up there, they would descend back down to that camp for the night. After that, the most dangerous part of the climb would be over. Then it would be hopefully a quick descent the rest of the way down. They spent the day slowly traversing a set of large and treacherous cliffs called the Dragon Spine. At the top of the spine was where they would make their camp. Then it was only the final climb, and only about 500 feet up to the final cliff, to the summit and the Oracle. The final cliff was the same all the way around the mountain. It wasn't a sheer cliff, straight up, but it was close to one. To do this final climb, they would need their ropes and pitons. The terrain was snow-covered now, and they didn't have any worry about water. They had stopped at one point and used their screen heaters to melt the snow and replenish their canteens. They would do this again on the way back down, and it should be sufficient to get them back out of the scree that surrounded Hoch, and into the more hospitable terrain. Although, depending on which descent they took, this could take more than a week. They were walking over a large glacier-like snowdrift that extended between two discs of the Dragon Spine when Bosch felt a rumbling at his feet. He stopped with one foot still in the air and looked around. Through the snow whipping in the air, he could see Varga in front of him, and beyond Varga, he could see Briak, the assistant climb master. But turning around, he couldn't see the soldiers behind him. He placed his foot down carefully, then stepped in that direction. There were two soldiers behind him. That was the marching order. The man directly behind him should have kept a good interval, always keeping him in sight. But Bosch couldn't see him. He started walking back and felt a hand on his shoulder. It was Varga, and he was shaking his head and pointing. Bosch followed the line of his arm and squinted into the wind. It was difficult to see anything with everything being various shades of white, but he made out a thin line where the lighting changed. It looked like a portion of the snow had given away. They were between two discs of the Dragon Spine, and the weight of the snow and the addition of them walking on it had caused a landslide. A lot of snow had fallen away to the right, and it had taken the two soldiers with it. Mazer and Briak joined them, and they set their ice picks firmly into the snow. They tied a rope to the picks, and Mazer, tying the rope around his waist, slowly walked out to where the two missing soldiers should be. Bosch watched in shock as Mazur disappeared in white. The rope that they had secured him to the ice picks with whistled as it quickly unwound. Bryak dove for it, and covering with his body, he rolled, wrapping it around an arm. It screeched as it burned against his cold weather coat, then he jerked as it came to a stop with the full weight of a falling Mazur. Again, the snow had fallen away, and it wasn't far from where they stood. The ground that they stood on was probably unstable, and it could fall away, too, so they didn't attempt to go out and look for the edge. Instead, the three of them just started slowly pulling in the rope, hand over hand. They hoped that Mazur wasn't hurt in the fall. If there was an edge that he had to get over, and he was unconscious, they could snap his neck trying to pull him up. If the snow were too soft on the edge, the rope would bite into it, and Mazur would be suspended a few feet from the top. They continued their slow pull, and it felt like they were getting some response from the other end of the rope, and after a minute of pulling, they saw Mazur as he lifted himself up over the edge. They waited while he caught his breath, and then let him crawl back toward them. They just took in the slack on the rope, so if another piece broke off, he wouldn't fall so far. When he reached them, the three of them knelt alongside him, and they put their heads close together so they could talk over the howling of the wind. Easily a 500-foot drop. They're gone. And the gap is too big. We won't be coming back down by this path. They gathered themselves into a new marching order, and now they tied themselves together with 10 feet of rope between each climber in the group. Mazur was first, then Varga and Bosch. And in the last position was the assistant climb master, Bryak. There were only four of them now, and if it hadn't been for the quick thinking of Bryak jumping in on the rope to save Mazur, there could very well have only been three of them. They finished day three without any more incidents. The dragon's spine seemed to be content with swallowing up only two of them. When they reached the base of the final cliffs, they set up a makeshift camp in a stupor. They assembled their tents together and climbed into their sleeping bags, still completely clad in their cold weather clothes. It seemed that no matter what they did, the cold still crept in. Bosch thought about the day, and it seemed to him to be a dream of white and death, and putting one foot in front of the other. That's all it was, just a dream of putting one foot in front of the other. He thought about the dream he had the night before when the snake bit him, and he confused this in his mind. Was that the real world and this the dream? Or was this the real world and that the dream? He couldn't really discern the difference, and the thin air and the cold just dulled him into an almost not caring. He fell into a restless sleep and didn't dream. This is the end of chapter 15. Make sure you stay tuned for chapter 16, where hopefully we reach the summit and the oracle. Thanks again for listening, and be sure to check out one of my websites, stormthecastle.com, castlefiction.com, and I have a blog where I post daily information about epic fantasy and fantasy. See you next week.